By the way, thanks to producer Tom Danheiser, because he produces the Emerging Artists segment. I can tell by his office, because you can't see Tom in there anymore. All you can see, CDs everywhere. Little heads sticking out from the packages. In a moment, we're going to be talking about quantum physics. We're going to talk about quantum physics in a way that you'll understand it, how it ties into consciousness, how it ties into our origins. God is Not Dead. That's the name of the book. Dr. Amit Goswami joins us. And we will be back with him, because he was on Coast to Coast with me a year ago, and he's back again on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Amit Goswami, PhD, theoretical nuclear physicist and professor emeritus, the University of Oregon's Institute for Theoretical Physics. His father was a Hindu guru in India, and in his work, Dr. Goswami brings knowledge of mystical traditions together with his desire for scientific exploration. He's a pioneer of the new paradigm of science called Science Within Consciousness. He's appeared in the popular film, What the Bleep Do We Know?, and the subject of a new documentary, The Quantum Activist. Here he is back on Coast to Coast, Dr. Amit Goswami. Doctor, how are you?
I'm good. Glad to be with you again.
Looking forward to this. I enjoy physics, especially when it's done like you have done, where people can understand it. Sometimes a physicist will come and be over everybody's head. You can't understand anything. You do a good job explaining things. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
What's new with you?
Well, all things are going full steam. We are developing a lot of activities under quantum activism, especially courses. There is a international university that my friend Paul Drua has established for integrative medicine, which is part of, you know, integral part of quantum activism. So this university is teaching, probably the first one of its kind to teach integrative medicine, which integrates regular medicine with alternative medicine.
What was that moment for you when you got interested in physics? And I assume it was a very long time ago as a youth. But what did that for you?
Well, it was very strange, you know, how I got into physics. I was going to be a historian. And then at the last moment, I went into science, still not knowing whether it will be physics or, because my mother wanted me to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the medical school, I even got admission. But just before taking the admission, I thought, no, I would like to be really someone who dissects animal carcasses all the time. So I went to the adjacent college and became a physics major.
Yeah, it's funny, because your career path, a little like mine, where my father wanted me to be a dentist. And so for 2 years, I was in the pre-dent curriculum at the University of Detroit in Michigan. And much like you, doctor, it hit me. I just said, no, I've always loved broadcasting. That's what I want to do. And I did it. I'm glad I did. But
good for you.
But yeah. We were going, why do our parents want us to be doctors? Yeah.
Well, it's a secure profession, I guess, and it does good to people.
Well, and you got that doctor title anyways. It's PhD, but you're a doctor.
True.
When you were smaller, were you interested in science?
No, not at all. I was, as I said, I wanted to be a historian. For a while, when I initially thought about a future career, I wanted to be a teacher, but like my father.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it went through a lot of very non-scientific kind of ambitions before I came to science.
I would guess your hobby might be, or your interest and passion on the side must be history and being a historian.
I still like historical novels the most.
Yeah, I thought that. You can tell in your work that I've seen over the last few years that your knowledge of history plays a great part in what you're doing now.
Yeah, I do have a very, very very tremendous interest in integrating history, like seeing the global connections. You know, usually history, the way we teach it, is kind of disjointed. History of a country and their faith. But I would like to integrate history in such a way that it's all global. That global connection is not usually seen. So, you know, I began with that kind of thing in mind. It's to encourage me very much. I wish I could do that. Later on, I found Toynbee, who has done it a little bit, but it has never been done in depth, this integrative view of history itself, like we are taking now about science, complete integration of all sciences together into one paradigm.
Well, it fascinates me with science, Doctor. And when we get into, of course, the title of your work, God is Not Dead, I mean, that is a title that's going to get everybody to wake up and go, whoa, tell me about this. Let's talk about quantum physics for a moment. Explain to us just what that means.
Well, quantum physics started with the word quantum, which means quantity in Latin. But that tells you not very much about what quantum physics is. Max Planck, who was the first to use the word quantum in physics, meant it to mean a discrete quantity of energy. That discreteness, that word is very interesting. Later, Niels Bohr envisioned electrons jumping from one atomic orbit to another without going through intervening space. Now it becoming more intriguing because discontinuity enters physics, and this has never happened before. Newtonian physics, objects move continuously, one beat at a time. Quantum physics had this unique feature, discontinuity as well as continuity. And then, of course, quantum physics was discovered in 1925-26, and all hell broke loose in physics because many of the Newtonian postulates that we have always believed, not only continuity, but also ideas such as the world is determined movement. Instead, we have uncertainty. The world cannot be fully determined by physics, by the equations of physics. This was very, very new. And then eventually things like locality, that everything has to be connected by signals, became replaced by the principle of non-locality. There is locality, of course, but there is also signal-less communication without signals. So this communication without signal actually is the most novel concept that you could ever think of. This is what makes room for the entry of consciousness into the picture.
Doctor, as a physicist, are you still striving, looking for that answer, who you are, why you're here?
I think I know some of these answers, which is a very good thing, I think. And it helps me to live, and I would like to convey that help to others who, like me, have worried about these questions. Who am I? What am I doing here? This kind of thing. What is the meaning of my life? I think I know a little about these things now. Quantum physics has helped me to develop a science which can give us some guidance about why we are here, why we do what we do, and how should we live.
Did this understanding, and I can't wait to get into this with you because I'm looking for that answer too, desperately. I think all of us are in some form or fashion. But did this knowledge, did that help convince you that there's a higher power out there, a more intelligent design, or not?
Yes, it convinces me that there is higher power. If you want to call the design intelligent design, that's fine. But lots of people are perturbed by that word because it's, you know, Christian connotation, which is unfortunate because there is nothing wrong in thinking that this higher power is intelligent. Of course, the higher power is intelligent. If we are intelligent, then a power higher than us, of course it would be intelligent. But the higher power, basically the idea frightens us, frightens some of us, not all of us, obviously. 50% of the world is still very religious. But the other 50% gets scared because the idea is that this person must be like a human person.
Yeah.
This is the wrong concept. Non-locality has removed all such concepts from physics, from science, from our thinking, because this consciousness is non-local. What does that mean? That means this consciousness is everywhere and yet not to be localized anywhere. So it is a very ubiquitous, very universal, cosmic consciousness. It's not an individual being, person like us. This should take away all the fear, all the scare that many scientists have about positing a God or a higher power in science. It's objective, in other words.
What created the higher power?
The higher power created itself. This is the only power that has the self-creation, because this is it. There is nothing
self-replicating, basically.
This is not only self-replicating. That is not even the right way of looking at it.
Nope.
This is all there is. And therefore, this being can only create appearances on itself. And quantum physics makes it very clear how these appearances occur. These appearances are what we see as the manifest world. This consciousness is consciousness itself and its possibility, its own being and its possibilities, the various possibilities. It then manifests through these appearances, a mechanism that I call tangled hierarchy. And once it manifests, it evolves. The manifestation evolves in order to manifest all the possibilities of this consciousness. So the purpose of evolution is to manifest the possibilities of consciousness. This also takes away some of the intelligent design versus evolution, intelligent design versus creation concept. Those controversies can be resolved by this kind of thinking.
Do you find that more scientists are now beginning to agree with you on this?
Well, scientists who are a little more interdisciplinary, they certainly have bothered about some of these questions. It is easier for them to agree because they see that there is no other way that consciousness can be introduced in science. There is, materialist science has existed for 400 years. We have now a very good science of matter. But matter is only part of our experience. We have, apart from sensing, we have feelings, we have thinking, we have even intuitions. So it is about time that we build a science of experience. In normal time, if science was not so combative with religion and spiritual ideas, now, normal course of science, we would naturally ask, okay, we have experienced the sensory part of our being, sensory part of our experience. Now, what is the explanation of the other parts? Because these other parts, there's no way that we cannot see that there is meaning in the other parts, there is causality in the other parts. So we would be curious. And that curiosity would automatically lead to an extension of science, as I have done, because quantum physics makes room for that extension. It's a natural room for extension. And we would have developed a science of experience, and all these debates would be completely unnecessary. The reason the debates occur is this feud between science and Christianity, which began modern science, and it is still being fought. It is being fought by the church because they won't admit many of the scientific truths, and it is fought by creationists, the bigots who literally interpret Christian Bible. A Christian Bible is a great book. Old Testament is a great book. But these books are not infallible. This idea that religions have, that their treatises, basic treatises, are infallible, does not help the integration much. Science similarly has started taking this approach that what they're calling scientific materialism, this idea that matter is everything, is also an infallible idea. And they refuse to do science on any other basis. This is why these ideas have difficulty in being accepted by everyone. But as I said, all interdisciplinary thinkers who recognize the importance of bringing into being a science of all of our experiences, they are appreciating this more and more, especially in medicine, in psychology. Those are the two open fields, and biology to some extent. There is a much more acceptance than in physics and chemistry, which is the science of matter. Physics and chemistry, these new ideas don't really make too much impact, except, of course, solve the paradoxes of quantum physics.
What is beginning to get these scientists to agree with you, for example, in this kind of view?
Well, because they need it. when you are faced with the idea of explaining acupuncture and find that there is no material way of explaining it, and if you are still a legitimate scientist, you know that acupuncture works and you would like to find a scientific explanation, curiosity will eventually win and you will ask, okay, so what can explain this? And if they find that a quantum theory-based science, new science explains this, you will embrace that science. So it is happening that way. I mean, in this past year alone, I have given there will be another one actually, lectures on international conferences, lectures on this integration that is going on between conventional and alternative medicine.
We're talking with Dr. Amit Goswami. Of course, his work, God is Not Dead. One of the things that still baffles me, the Big Bang Theory, I still cannot comprehend how this whatever exploded, how it got here in the first place, and why it happened. I just can't picture it.
Well, part of the problem, of course, and that everyone has, because Big Bang doesn't really give an answer to that.
It doesn't, no.
Which is what is before the Big Bang.
That's right.
To say Big Bang is the beginning of the universe.
There had to be something before.
Has to be something before. So you have to close the loop that leads to such a question, what was before? You know, it reminds me of that great story of St. Augustine. St. Augustine, as you know, used to teach his church the ideas of how God created heaven and earth. So one day, a parishioner in the backbench cries out, "Hey, Augustine, you're always telling us how God created heaven and earth, but please tell us, what was God doing before he created heaven and earth?" And Augustine couldn't answer, just like today's science cannot answer.
They can't.
But Augustine had a very good quip. He said, he created hell for people like you who ask such questions.
But questions like that have to be asked.
Have to be asked. And quantum physics finally is giving us an answer. Quantum thinking shows us that the basic reality is consciousness and its possibilities. And so if you take things in that way, then you realize that the very basic reality must be consciousness and all its possibilities. And if you have all possibilities included in consciousness, then you immediately realize, oh, in such a being, nothing can happen because past, present, future, all time is already included. Nothing can happen. This is what in spiritual traditions they call eternity. So reality begins and always remain as eternity. This is why I was using very careful language, that this higher power, as you called it, manifests the world as appearances. Everything is appearance on this eternity. Because in eternity, nothing can happen. How can appearances can be made to happen? By making limitations. So you limit some of the possibilities, and limit more possibilities, and you limit more possibilities, and then ultimately it becomes manageable. Now you can manifest, because it has now developed some ignorance, developed some forgetfulness, that's another way of thinking of it. And so some of the possibilities are forgotten, and now the remaining possibilities, one can evolve in manifestation. And that's precisely what happened.
You know, I can walk outside and pick up a rock and feel it, and I know there's some substance to it. Consciousness, I feel it's there, but I can't hold it. I can't grasp it.
No, and this is, of course, what puzzles people. How can consciousness, which is something woolly that you cannot hold in your hand, how can that consciousness contain or become, be the ground of being like of things like matter, which is
That's
hard,
right.
which you can hold in your hand, which you can kick if you like. You know, there was this famous story of Johnson, Dr. Johnson, who, when asked, how do you refute the idea that consciousness is consciousness, without consciousness there cannot be any material world, and he said, I prove it thus, and kicked a stone.
Stay with us, Doctor. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm going to ask you those questions of, who are we and why are we here? You might have that answer for us. And of course, our special guest tonight, Dr. Amit Goswami, as we're talking about his new work, God is Not Dead. We'll take your phone calls tonight with him as well as we talk about quantum physics origins. I want to get right into that when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Amit Goswami. Doctor, tell me a little bit about the film, The Quantum Activist, before we get back into your God is Not Dead theory.
Okay. This Quantum Activist is about quantum activism, how to use quantum principles to transform your life, our lives, and also our societies. The quantum principles that we were talking about earlier, like non-locality, signalless communication, non-local consciousness, the ideas like discontinuity, which appears in creative experiences. So quantum activism emphasizes creativity a lot. Non-locality, communication with the entire community of people, that kind of thing, a lot. So if you practice to develop these qualities within yourself, how to get along with people in relationship, how to be creative. Not only your life can change, but you realize that without society supporting it, without society supporting the kind of creative exploration you would like to have, you would like to see, or having kind of job that supports creativity, we really cannot do it. We become shortchanged in our creativity and relationships. So the idea is to develop a society which also be conducive towards developing non-local relationships that go deep and creativity. You know, today we complain about creativity and innovation everywhere, but people don't realize that the reason people are not so creative anymore is that for the past 60 years, we have shortchanged our own creativity through a belief system called scientific materialism. Matter, computers, they don't have creativity. They're machines. Machines do not have creativity. They cannot have creativity. Concept of creativity without freedom to choose is absurd. And this is what science has done under the garb of a belief system called scientific materialism. It's a very, very unfortunate thing, development of science. Fortunately, of course, the new science has come along, and sooner or later, it will replace this scientific materialist science. And we'll all be better for it. That's the job of quantum activism.
Let me ask you this. Last week, I had Bill Nye, the science guy, on. And he was talking about creationism, evolution, with his thoughts that parents should not discuss creationism with their children. And how do you feel about that difference between creationism and evolution? I think that there should be a mix there.
Well, this is the thing, that scientists feel threatened. Anybody who is doing something that is exclusive feels threatened by other belief systems because their belief system itself is exclusive. Religions have the same kind of problem. Christianity is pretty exclusive too. This idea of creationism has something very basic in it, which is believable, which is the idea of creation, creativity. We need creativity to create such a wonderful world. That's obvious. So God has to be creative. This higher power that we're talking about, that quantum physics is giving us every reason to believe, and data after data now is reviving the concept that we do have higher power with causality, with causal power. So, and this causal power better be creative, because the creation of the world is the most original thing ever. So this God, or whatever you call it, must be quite original. There's no question about it. So in that sense, creationism is not, certainly not a very completely ignoramus idea. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, evolution is fact, because it's supported by such enormous fossil data that only a diehard creationist would refuse that idea. So what is the way out of this?
But couldn't we have had creationism through evolution?
Absolutely. This is what I propose in a book called Creative Evolution, that the creation is not once and for all creation in the beginning. That idea doesn't make sense in view of the data. This is where this infallibility of Christian dogma becomes a barrier. If you believe that Bible is good book, but it's not infallible. And some of it may be very well be metaphorical. Like it does say, God did not create the world in an instant. Even the book of Genesis says that God took 6 days and six nights to create the world. So there's a room for metaphorical understanding here, which makes room for evolution, and we can have an integration if people are open-minded. Creation, as you say, evolution with occasional creation, that's what the data suggests. Data suggests very strongly that while there is continuous epochs of evolution, there are also very quick bursts of evolution. So those quick bursts can be seen as quantum leaps, this discontinuous quantum movement that I was talking about earlier. If you start thinking that way, these quantum leaps occur also in our creative experiences. So you can say that these quantum leaps in evolution are examples of creativity of consciousness itself, very large scale creativity, creativity by from a consciousness that is much more potent, much more creatively powerful than we are.
So now we come up to a couple of questions, and that is, who are we? Why are we here?
Okay, so why are we? I already have touched upon it. And consciousness and its possibilities, that's the ground of being. Mm-hmm. So we are here because we want to, consciousness wants to manifest its possibility. Possibilities become subtler and subtler. So first it's matter, which is gross, basically. But then feelings, subtler. Meanings, even subtler, that's what we think. We think meanings. And then even subtler than that are those archetypal values, love, beauty, justice, truth, about which we wonder and wonder and wonder, but still cannot quite solve the problem of what is love. We are intrigued. So that's very, very subtle. So that's the objective of evolution. Evolution is to manifest subtler and subtler possibilities of consciousness. Why are we here? So we are here and we are satisfied when we pursue this manifestation, when we pursue the reason for conscious manifestation, this reason, the purpose of evolution. When we pursue that, we are happy. When we are not pursuing it, then we become unhappy. We become disjointed with the world. So here is your distinction between what is good and what is evil. We become sided with evil, namely, we move away from that unity, away from the purpose of that unity consciousness, when we are not serving the purpose of evolution, when we are not evolving better and better representations of the possibilities of consciousness.
Does this convince you that there's an afterlife?
Absolutely, because yeah. Look, you know, if you think of the subtle possibilities, take love. You have lived quite a wonderful life so far, George, no question about
I
it,
think,
right?
I think so. You know, I've had my ups and downs. I'm a human.
You're a human. Yeah. But can you even contemplate that you know everything about love?
No, not at all.
See what I mean? Nor can I. So it makes sense to say that we need many lives to really, really understand and explore these very, very subtle concepts. Not so subtle concepts are fairly easy. I mean, I can say pretty much with pretty much confidence, although very limited experience, that I have pretty much idea of what sexuality is, what anger is, what competitiveness mm-hmm. is, you know. But about things like love, no, because they are much more subtle than these basic feelings. So this is the idea, that we need many incarnations to study these soulful activities. These are called soul activities, these love, beauty, justice, which Plato called archetype. This is also what good books call activities that give us, that satisfies our soul satisfaction, soul satisfying ideas. So, and they take time, and therefore we have the concept of coming back again and again, and that concept also is now verified by scientific data, and we now have a good theory for reincarnation in the form of quantum physics.
See, I think that's fantastic. Now, I mean, your father was a Hindu guru.
Right.
Was he a believer in this as well? Life after death?
Yeah. Now, generally, Hindus have a belief system, especially in his generation, that would generally be the belief that, yes, we incarnate many times.
Was that belief system helpful for you as you grew up?
Well, initially, you know, my initial reaction, I think subconsciously I probably rebelled when I went to study science.
Yeah.
So I became a rebellion. I became a materialist for a long time. I was a materialist until I hit the age of 37. And then something happened. I had an experience. I sort of thought of a question that I never thought before, which is, why do I live this way, this disjointed way, non-integrated way, where my work, at that time, theoretical nuclear physics, has nothing to say about how I live my life. This question that you are asking me and we are discussing, why am I here? Those questions were paramount questions at that time for me. And what I did for 10 hours a day, theoretical nuclear physics had nothing to say about these questions. And that sort of shook me up. Why do I live this way? I didn't want to live that way anymore. I wanted to live in a way where I search for meaning, and all my life become dedicated to the search for meaning and values.
Do you find that this belief system has made your life better? You've lived it better?
I think so. There is no question about it that my life is now full of so much more satisfaction. You know, satisfaction is something which is the gauge of whether your life is going right or not. Joseph Campbell, the famous mythologist, used to say, follow your bliss. I would put it as slightly differently. I would put it as follow your happiness. If your happiness index is good, then you are following what pleases you, what is your heart's call, what is your learning agenda in this particular incarnation. If you're not following it, dissatisfaction follows, and if you're not following it at all, depression results.
You have talked about in your work that dreams support the existence of God. Explain that.
Well, dreams are meaningless when you consider dreams from a materialist point of view. So the first of the things that you notice when you have a science of experience, where not only sensing matter, but also feeling, thinking, and intuition become legitimate, first thing you notice is that meanings are involved in dreams. Dreams are not meaningless because they are telling us about the life as it is evolving in terms of what is the meaning of our life. You know, I studied dreams for 2 years under a teacher, and I enjoyed so very much by realizing that dreams are a pretty ongoing story, just as our regular waking life is a pretty ongoing story with a compulsory storyline. We cannot really ignore what happens to us during the day, during our waking hours. Similarly, if you pay attention, you will find that the dream life too tells us a pretty serious story as life is evolving.
Sure does.
In the meaning direction. But you have to recognize it's only in the aspect of meaning. It talks to us about the meaning of our life, how our meaning of our life is going. So initially, during that period, I was seeing a lot of dreams of toilets, lavatories, you know, that kind of thing.
What a horrible dream.
What a horrible dream, right? But it was necessary because it was about purification. My mind was full of stuff, unhappiness, stuff that make me unhappy. So I had to clear my mind about...
Were you unhappy for a while and then you went into this different form of bliss?
Well, I was still not finding anything, so I was very, very unhappy. Initial parts of the search was extremely unsettling because before I had some satisfaction of doing what other people wanted me to do. Now I was doing my own bidding, but I had nothing. I had nothing to show for it. I was not producing anything. I was very insecure because, you know, publisher perish world. I lived in that world as an academic, although I had full professorship and I reached the highest academic ladder, but they still didn't have to give me raises. So, you know.
Were you secure financially? But that doesn't make you happy, does it?
And well, it didn't matter so much because I had freedom. So freedom was more than money. So obviously, although I was definitely financially hard pressed often, but it was okay. My wife had to take a job and so forth, but
yeah.
that was all right. She did it willfully and quite gladly,
and enjoyed herself.
Managed. Yeah, that kind of thing. So that was not the major problem. The major problem was this insecurity that I felt because I was not pursuing anything that was fruitful.
Yes, I understand.
That was giving me achievement. The sense of achievement was lacking. So that sense of achievement came back only after I discovered the new paradigm idea. Consciousness is the ground of all being, not matter. And, you know, going back to that old question that you had, you know, how can something concrete like matter be contained as possibilities of consciousness? The key is quantum physics. As soon as you realize matter is not concrete, matter is actually possibility before it becomes concrete. That's the key thing. Possibility is very woolly. Possibilities cannot hold you in your hand either.
And realistically, if you looked at it with a microscope, you'd realize that it doesn't look like what it is.
Exactly. And that's the other thing that liberated a lot of physicists from this kind of dull thinking. Because when you look into the heart of matter, what do you find? You find it's mostly empty space. It's not as solid anywhere. So the solidity, rigidity, all these are camouflage. All this comes from after the interaction of consciousness with the material possibilities, not before. Before, everything is possibility. This is the absolute idea of quantum physics, absolute mathematical idea. This one can never, never, never prove otherwise. Quantum physics is now verified to such a degree that no scientist in the right mind will ever question the validity of quantum physics. Although a few people still do.
Right.
But really, I think that their mind is just a little bit of that non-accepting type, like the creationist. In spite of all the data on evolution, a creationist will always ignore evolution. Similarly, these scientists ignore the message of quantum physics,
right,
that everything is possible.
And there's a mix there somewhere. There should be.
It should be. And this mix eventually will win the day because truth, ultimately, you know, science is a pursuit of truth, and eventually scientists will accept them. The problem with today's science, materialist science, is that because everything is matter, we have undermined concepts such as truth. And look, we are suffering because of it. I mean, you know, I just was watching the last day of the Republican convention, and what last 2 days,
mm-hmm.
and what was the major complaint of all the journalists? They were all saying, well, it did not adhere to truth. Everybody is telling more lies than ever before. And now, why is that? What is the problem? Why do people tell so many lies today? Because science itself, materialist science itself, has undermined archetypes, values such as truth. Truth is a value on which science itself is based. So if science undermines the value of truth, then where does science stand? And this is why today Rush Limbaugh can deny science with an open face, because he doesn't have anything to be ashamed about. Science itself is denying science because science itself is undermining the value of truth.
Will science ever find the real answers to all these questions?
If it comes back to the right direction, which is the direction that quantum physics is showing us, if we develop science on the basis of consciousness, consciousness is the ground of being, then truth comes back once again in science. And once truth comes back, we can rely on science, and therefore scientific answers will come to every question we seek.
Ahmed, we're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to talk more about your work, God Is Not Dead. Plus, we'll take some phone calls with you.